You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are we on? Are we recording? Is it on now? That's nice. Do you guys want to come sit closer? Come closer. When Matthew Freud suggested that I have my debut live podcast, my first call was to Josh Berger. Josh said yes. During his 30 years at Warner Brothers, Josh brought to audiences the greatest movies, Harry Potter, A Star is Born, The Hangover, which I personally loved, and Hell Make London, a city of moviegoers and movie makers. As chairman of the British Film Institute, he turned it into something exciting and dynamic. In his spare time, he co-produced the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of The Temptations. In his spare time, Josh is my friend. And though I'm 20 years ahead of him, for endless reasons, I refer to him as my older brother. It's safe to say that I think I know practically everything there is to know about Josh Berger. But tonight, talking with him, with you, as an audience, about food in his life, I think and hope that I'll learn more. Lucky me. So you also might know that Josh, if you do listen, he also has a very important role in that he introduces every podcast of River Cafe Table 4. Here we go.
This is the job about which I'm proudest that I've had. And here goes. Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
How about that? Yay!
Thank you for coming tonight. That is the end of the podcast.
We're done. Let's go.
This was great.
Okay. So you talk a lot about going to restaurants for pleasure. But in the movie business, a lot of work gets done in restaurants. People do deals in restaurants. They interview people in restaurants. Would you do business over food?
Definitely. I mean, the place where I really learned the art of a sort of a business meal, where they really get it right, is Spain. First of all, you go to lunch in Spain at about 2 or 2:30. And if you get it right and you're doing business with somebody, you'll still be there at 5:30 or 6 o'clock. And so there's an unwritten rule in Spain when you're at a business lunch, which is you never talk about business until coffee and dessert. And so that means that you'd be sitting there with, you know, somebody for 2, maybe 3 hours before you have any discussion. And of course, you drink a bottle or two of wine before you get there. So needless to say, all of the business you do is fabulous because you are completely wankered by the time you know, dessert gets there. And I tell you, the best business meetings I've ever had in restaurants always were in Spain for that reason. It's a very smart idea. You know, you develop a rapport with somebody, you talk about what you're doing and what matters to you. So by the time you get to the business, it takes 15 minutes and you kind of sort it out. So, and any restaurant where you've got space, you know, just to answer your question.
Yeah.
The somewhere where you actually are not on top of other people and the service is that right balance of attentive, but basically in the background.
Does taking somebody out to a restaurant tell you about the person you're taking out as well? The way they behave in a restaurant?
Yeah. Yeah. You can tell everything that matters probably about somebody during a meal in a restaurant, you know, how they talk to you, but more importantly, how they talk to the people in the restaurant. And when people are polite to the people serving them, when they're rude, if they're short, if they are looking at you in the eye or not. I mean, all of those little clues are very helpful, especially if you're trying to assess whether or not to work with somebody, to be in business with somebody. It's very revealing for sure.
I don't know if you know the drill, but the drill is at every guest. And that's how we really started. The idea of doing a podcast was that we would just do a recipe every day of the year. And some very bright person said to me, Ruthie, maybe we need a little bit more. So the idea of the recipe segued into a story about food in the guest's life. So with Josh, we're going to start with the recipe that you've chosen from the River Cafe cookbooks.
Yes. I will read Banya Cauda with Prosecco. These are autumn vegetables, but it's a seasonal dish. It serves six, and you would add the following. 750 milliliters of Prosecco, 3 garlic cloves peeled, 300 grams of Swiss chard, 1 small pumpkin cut into 6 pieces, 3 celery hearts quartered, 12 salted anchovies cleaned and filleted, 250 grams unsalted butter softened, and 50 milliliters of the best River Cafe olive oil. So you put the Prosecco into a saucepan, add the garlic and boil until the Prosecco has reduced and the garlic is soft. Remove from the heat and set aside. Then bring a saucepan of salted water to the boil. Blanch the Swiss chard, making sure the stalks are softened before draining. Add the fennel, pumpkin, and celery hearts to reduce the heat and simmer for 10 minutes or until tender. To finish the sauce, return the saucepan with the reduced Prosecco and softened garlic to the heat and add the anchovy fillets. Allow them to melt into the mixture. Gently whisk in the softened butter little by little, removing the pan from the heat after the first addition of butter. When all the butter has been incorporated, add the olive oil and black pepper. Arrange the vegetables on a warm plate and pour over the sauce and serve immediately.
Yum.
Yum. Hmm? Yum. So of all the recipes that you could have chosen in the books, what made you choose Banya Cauda, Josh Berger?
So Banya Cauda is a dish which I first tried at the River Cafe. I don't like anchovies. Mm. And so Banya Cauda was always something that I wouldn't go near. And then I think I tried it off of somebody's plate, not knowing what it was. And it was just the best vegetable dish I think I had ever eaten. And the anchovies are, you know, they just come together with all of the cooked vegetables and they make this beautiful, salty, warm, fabulous vegetable dish. And it's now my favorite vegetable dish in the world. And I order it every time it's on the menu. And whether it's a summer Banya Cauda or indeed a winter, it is fabulous. And I love it.
And so it's pretty sophisticated. It's very regional. It is very much from the Piemonte region of Italy. And I think growing up in LA, did you ever have a Banya Cauda in Los Angeles?
Well, Banya Cauda means warm bath.
So you've had a warm bath.
I had warm baths, not that many, but I have to say I'm not sure that I had anything even close to a Banya Cauda, except for maybe a pizza.
So tell me about growing up in LA. You grew up in Beverly Hills?
I did. I was born in Los Angeles, California, where I spent my first 18 years, really not leaving at all. And I grew up in the Beverly Hills part of Los Angeles to parents who were in the entertainment business. One was a manager and the other was an agent. And so they worked with actors and directors. And my father in particular worked in the music business and managed a lot of the Motown artists. So I had a strange kind of childhood of a lot of recording sessions and American Bandstand and Soul Train on the weekends. But I grew up in a very entertainment world, which is not surprising because it's a sort of a one-industry town, or at least it used to be back in the 70s and 80s when I grew up.
And what were your childhood memories of food in both your home or going out to restaurants? What was that like?
Well, I was in lots of restaurants with my father. My parents were divorced. There was no family meal as such. That just wasn't a part of my childhood. And I just kind of remember certain things that I ate, which I kind of loved. And there was a British woman named Sarah, who was my father's girlfriend after my parents split, who made me a BLT from Britain. And somehow it seemed so exotic that it was a British bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich.
How funny.
And it really was the best thing I had ever eaten up until that point. I was about 8 years old. And I didn't hear. What was it?
He said, "Hear, hear."
Oh, hear, hear. I agree. There we go. We love it. And I had it with a root beer, which I don't know if anybody's familiar with that drink, but it was a very, very good combination. And then from there, though, I would say that the thing that I was most involved in eating regularly was breakfast cereal. And I was a real expert on breakfast cereal, and I ate, I think, every one that was on the market, because I would make it a point of trying all of them. And there was a time that I could do like a blind tasting and name every breakfast cereal. And I would eat it for breakfast, and I would also eat it at night, and even in the daytime. And it's nothing to be proud of, but I am still somewhat addicted to breakfast cereal.
As a child, would you be expected to buy them the cereals yourself, or would your parents or someone in the house?
When I would go to the market,
come to a cupboard full of breakfast cereals, you could choose them.
Yeah, when I would go to the market, I would buy them myself. My mother would buy them. My father would buy them. My father still buys them. When I come to Los Angeles and I stay with him, he still loads up with, you know, Cocoa Krispies and Cocoa Pops and Lucky Charms.
There used to be the saying that the box had more nutrition than the cereal.
That is very possible. The other thing I would do is I would read the boxes, and I would commit to memory everything that was on the boxes. This is what I was left to do as a child.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With summer fast approaching, life tends to get busy. Seeing family, friends, hosting dinners, barbecues, picnics in the park, and everything else that comes between. What's also important is that we find time for ourselves to rest and recharge. Therapy can be a vital tool to assist you with boundaries and managing your schedule in a way that helps you stay happy and healthy. If you're looking to find a new therapist or start therapy for the first time, BetterHelp is worth a try. It's entirely online, which makes it easy, accessible, and flexible with your schedule. Completing a short questionnaire will match you to the right licensed therapist for you. If it's not working, you can change for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Well, I always think that one of, again, knowing you really well, that you are an exceptional guest. You are somebody who feels very comfortable in other people's houses. We all, as hosts, love having you in our house. And I think that that might come from spending a lot of time in other people's houses as a kid growing up. In a nice after school, going to...
Yeah.
Did you remember any of the food from... Would you choose kind of who you wanted to go to which house because of the food? Or would you just go to people's houses?
I would go to people's houses. I mean, I've been, of course, in anticipation of this conversation, I've been trying to remember anything that I could about the food that I would eat in my friends' houses. And I did spend an inordinate amount of time in other people's houses growing up. My mother worked, my father worked, and so I had a couple of sort of very close friends, and I would spend much time in their place. And I would have dinner there invariably almost every night. And I just can't remember one of the meals. Unfortunately. But I do remember, I remember my mother cooked, she really cooked two things that I remember and that I loved and I still love, a pot roast and a lasagna, and a stuffed cabbage as well,
the
third thing. And in fact, I called her the other day and I asked her, why was the stuffed cabbage so good? And she told me because she added brown sugar and sour salt. I don't even know what sour salt is.
I don't know what sour salt is. Does anybody know what sour salt is? No, I've never heard of it. No.
It's a very obscure recipe, maybe from Eastern Europe or something.
Yeah. And then you were thrust into the world of Motown and music. And was there food there? Would you go to the equivalent of what music terms is a set or a studio? Would there be food there?
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to sets of like those TV shows that I mentioned, which I used to go to on the weekend with my dad and his clients, and I think, frankly, TV sets then and even today, and recording sessions in the studio, it's all the same kind of food. You know, it's kind of fast food. It's sandwiches, it's donuts, it's cookies, nothing particularly good. I mean, I think there's a focus today, at least, on a movie set or a TV set to have some healthier options, because that's sort of the age that we're in. But back then, it was great for a kid because it was just junk food everywhere. I loved that. But my godfather was Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown. And so I spent my weekends at his house often. And so on Sundays, sort of late in the day, the sort of dinner that would be served early was Southern fried cooking, which was his background and his heritage. And in a way, that could be the first cuisine that I understood to be a particular category of American cuisine that I loved. You know, it was fried chicken and collard greens and black-eyed peas and macaroni and cheese. And I mean, it was just all of it was completely delicious. I used to really look forward to that Sunday, in that Sunday evening meal. And it was funny because it would be served in these beautiful, you know, silver servers, but it was, you know, just this very earthy food. And yeah, blackened cod and blackened redfish actually is the
What's
one
that?
Loved.
What's
blackened redfish? It's a sort of a southern way of cooking fish, I think from Louisiana and Mississippi, where I don't know how they do it. I mean, they blacken this redfish. I mean, they really char it. That's very, very smoky and kind of the skin is crispy and really tasty and spicy too. Mm.
Well, we could go to when you went to university. Was that an awakening at any point?
It was. I left LA and I lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I was going to Harvard. There was no awakening yet while I was there. I liked school food in high school and in college, you know, this kind of mass-produced food. But the awakening happened more when I took a year off of school and I went to live in Italy to work. And I was in Venice and a guy was selling a raw tomato. I think he was just trying to get rid of the last bits of him. He said, here, you know, I'm going to sell you, you know, a couple of tomatoes for, I don't know, a couple of lira or whatever at the time. And it was really hot and I was really thirsty. And so I bit into a tomato of all things. And it was like the greatest thing I had ever tasted in my life. And I'd just gotten to Italy. And so began this a kind of revelation about food and about how good food can be in Italy. And I was traveling around, but I was living in Milan. And really the place that I discovered this was in a neighborhood restaurant in Milan near where I lived. And it was just, you know, a lady in the kitchen and her husband was the maitre d'.
What year was this, Josh?
This was in 1986 and the fall of 86 and the winter of 87. And I just happened upon this place, and then I went there three times a week, and I got to know the family, and they taught me about Italian food. And I ate so many different incredible meals. And it wasn't, you know, some of the famous dishes, but it was just, you know, the fish. It's like il pesce, you know, the il pollo, like the chicken, the meat, the fish, the vegetables, I contorni, you know, and they just serve. You don't even know what you were eating half the time. And it was just mind-blowing. And I was alone a lot of the time, which meant that I could really sort of appreciate it. You know, there's no talking and I was learning Italian as well. So I would speak to these people and they would explain to me what I was eating. And I think at that point, I realized that this was going to be like a love affair for the rest of my life. And I kind of got very enthusiastic about food, no matter what the food was. And I still am.
Two other people, I think I talked about Milan. I think it was Norman Foster who said that he had his first risotto in Milan. And up until then, he just had rice, you know, and what that meant, you know, just eating your first risotto. You know, I think Milan is probably a really good place to discover food. Did you ever think about cooking or did you just want to keep eating out?
Well, my roommate, Paolo Savignano, taught me how to make pasta. And the other thing he taught me how to do was with vegetables, like raw vegetables. And the one that really made an impression was finocchio, fennel, which was just take a raw, I never knew what a fennel was actually. So he pulled this thing out, started cutting it into pieces, and then just olive oil, salt on a piece of raw fennel. It's one of the greatest things in the world.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because coming from California, which is the garden of the United States now, you know, the artichokes and fennel and tomatoes and aubergine, that we really now look at California as a place where we get these great vegetables, and yet we kind of probably turned our back on the ingredient. And then it all changed. And now in California, the ingredient is so important now. The way they grow vegetables in Napa Valley or surrounding, you know, Los Angeles is huge, isn't it? But there still is that thing about that man giving you the ripest tomato in Venice.
Exactly. And actually, something I didn't mention, when I finished university, I went to live in Paris. That was the first place I worked after school for Warner Brothers. And I had a great friend through one of my best friends from college, this guy Alex, who was a chef, and he was training at Taillevent. And so while he was there, every Sunday night, we would have a dinner with all of these friends from school who were living in Paris at the same time. And every person, there was a kind of a core group, and everybody would bring one or two people. So we had these dinner parties every Sunday night, and Alex would try out his recipes and the things he was learning. I mean, and actually, I have to say that, you know, aside from my year off in Milan, where I kind of discovered great ingredients and great food, and then Alex really taught me about buying great food. I mean, you just reminded me, you know, I used to go to the market with him off the Rue du Temple on the Saturday morning, and we'd buy just whatever was there that he liked the look of. And then we'd go back and he would just throw something together and just make brunch for the two of us. And then Sunday nights we'd have these dinner parties. And that was the best food I had ever eaten up until that time.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
So you talk about the exposure to Europe, you know, about Milan, about France, but you also, you have to bring in Spain here because you, I know you talk about Spain a lot. You love Spain. You eat Spanish food, cook Spanish food. Talk about Spain for a minute.
Yeah. I moved to Madrid and I had been warned, you know, Spain, people had said to me, the food is not that great and it's all basically golden brown and everything's fried and, you know, you're not going to love the food. And of course, everybody who told me that really had just been there for a week on a holiday and didn't really know the food. And I have to say, it might be the country that I most like eating in because of the variety, number one. I mean, Spain is a country of, you know, a half dozen countries, you know, Galicia and what you eat there versus the Basque country versus Catalonia versus Castilla versus Andalusia versus Valencia. I mean, every part of that country has really its own cuisine and they're very distinct, really because so many different groups of people have been through that country and have run it. The Moorish influence in Spain, I think, has created just great, great variety of food and the fish and the meat and the sauces and the soups, because I'm obsessed with soups. Mm. And I you know, just from Asturias and the fabada and the lentejas, the lentils of Spain, I still think it might be one of the greatest dishes in the world. I go hunting for it when I get to Spain. I was so wildly happy in that country with every day of my food experiences. And also, the idea that you can just walk around town and just walk into a bar and say, what's the specialty? And they'll make you like the greatest mushrooms you've ever had. And then you'll go next door and you'll get a tortilla española, which is basically egg and onion and potato omelet that is so unbelievably delicious. And if you chuck chorizo in it, it's even better. And you can walk to every neighborhood in big Spanish cities and find 25 different bars that each has a specialty. And I would highly recommend San Sebastian for that, because that is sort of
huge. Yeah.
San Sebastian is the best city in the world for tapas bars, because each one, again, has a specialty and the variety is just mind-boggling. You could go there for a week and go to a different place every hour and you wouldn't exhaust it. And then there's the wine. The wine in Spain is, I think, my favorite wine. And please don't tell our hosts in France. But but again, the variety of
Ribera. Which wine do you like?
Where to begin? I mean, I love Pesquera, and I love the sort of smaller, more humble wines, and the white wines of Galicia. The Albariño is just fantastic with seafood, and then Chacolí from the Basque Country, which the guys, when you go into the bar, and then they hold the bottle way up, not the bottle, the leather pouch, and then they hold it up here, and then they pour it all the way down. It's like acrobatic. It's fabulous.
You are married to Dana Harmon, who is Israeli, and I think that a lot of your conversation with me lately has been about two subjects. One is what it's like to eat in Tel Aviv and Jaffa, and the way the cultural food of that area has changed so much and what people are cooking there. Would you, either of you, like to talk about food in Israel right now?
For sure. I think it's definitely one of the most exciting places to eat in the world. I mean, they just, there's something about, I don't know, the creativity and the risk taking and the ingredients and the fact that many of these chefs come from, you know, Argentina, Mexico, Iraq, Iran, America. And so that there's just these, you know, these really interesting combinations of ingredients and foods, and it's very original and it's unbelievably good. But the truth is, I think it's true in a lot of cities, though. I mean, that's one city where there's a lot of exciting chefs. But, you know, London has a similarly exciting collection of chefs that come from all over the world as well. And New York and Los Angeles and Paris. And, I mean, it's probably the most exciting time, in terms of restaurants and creativity, probably ever, with food and food technology as well.
If food is celebration, it's love, it's being together, it's delicious, and if food is comfort to you, Josh Berger, at the end of our conversation, what would be your comfort food?
So my comfort food would probably be bucatini alla matriciana.
Ah, nice.
I'm
sure you're going to say cereal. You don't want to say cereal?
I wanted to surprise you.
Oh, I never would have. Sure you're going to say cereal.
Well, basically, I would have said the spaghetti al pomodoro, you know, tomato pasta, which is our favorite meal always. And that is, in fact, the right answer. But I was listening to, you know, over time, I listened to all the podcasts that you do. And everybody says the same thing.
Yeah, they do.
And it's just, it's just not interesting at this point to say that. So I thought I'd go with bucatini alla matriciana, which feels more interesting and actually is even better, because it is the best pasta dish, I think, in the world.
It is.
Delicious. I recommend it.
Comfort or not. Thank you, Josh. I love you.
Love you, Ruthie. Thank you.
Thank you. To visit the online shop of The River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, HELP.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.